You may have found that when you tell people that you go to Unity, you get one of, or two responses. The first response that is common is for people to say, oh, Unity, is that the same as Unitarian? And the answer, of course, is no. And you would say no, and if you wanted to elaborate, you could say that actually Unity and Unitarianism shared a common heritage until the late 1800s, when the Transcendentalists, including Ralph Waldo Emerson, Henry David Thoreau, Theodore Parker, and others, spurred sort of a fork in the road, if you will. And one route led to social and political activism and became the modern Unitarian Universalist movement. And the other path moved in the direction of focusing on spiritual growth through prayer and meditation and incorporated ideas from the 19th century mental healing movement. And that second path became known as New Thought Christianity, of which Unity is a part. The second response when you tell people that you go to Unity is a little more ominous. So people may say, oh, Unity, I heard of that. I heard it's a cult. Wow, shocking, right? Shocking, or conversely, laughable. Knowing that Unity is open and inclusive, non-dogmatic, that it respects all religions and leaves it to the individual to choose their path, you might be tempted to say, actually, Unity is about as far from a cult as you could possibly get. You might even say that Unity is the uncult. This word cult is a scary one, but you know, it hasn't always been so. The word cult comes from the Latin word cultus, which means worship. So for centuries, the word cult was just synonymous with religion. And if you wanted to disparage a certain religious tradition or path, you would call it a sect or a heresy. Only since the 1970s has the word cult taken on a darker meaning. Now the dictionary includes a definition of cult that says, a religion regarded as unorthodox or spurious. Sketchy, in other words. A religion regarded as unorthodox or spurious. You know, as it turns out, that casts a pretty wide net. Because if you go looking through history, you will find that almost every religious tradition has at one time or another been considered unorthodox or spurious by someone. Remember that the Romans persecuted the Christians for centuries because they thought Christian beliefs and practices, particularly communion, were so strange. The Romans actually thought that Christians were cannibals for eating the body and drinking the blood. And let's remember John Calvin. He and his followers were considered the enemies of the prevailing religion when they began introducing the movement that became the Presbyterian Church. And then there is John Wesley. He was ousted from the Episcopal Church of England because of his unorthodoxy, and as a result, he started his own sect, the Methodist Church. Martin Luther was denounced as a heretic when he challenged the Roman Catholic Church and sparked the Lutheran movement. 100 years ago, Mormons were a despised cult. There's a pattern here. That pattern is that it seems that the established religion tends to label or imply as unorthodox or spurious anything that is new or different. By today's terms, they would call it a cult. And that word cult serves to scare people from going to it, from checking it out, keeps them in line, if you will. You know, today this word cult is particularly frightening. It has taken on an even more insidious meaning to mean a deviant religious organization that is dangerous to its followers. So when we think of a cult, we think of the Branch Davidians, of Heaven's Gate, of the Manson family, Jim Jones, the People's Temple, all these horrific stories that we've heard, that definitely triggers a reaction in us. So today, friends, we're going to dive right into this. We're going to nip this thing in the bud where people throw that label cult at Unity. We're going to look at what are the primary characteristics associated with a cult today and compare that to Unity. Ready? First of all, exactly. A cult believes there is only one right way, and you are expected, if not forced, to believe it. This is the exact opposite of Unity. Unity honors all paths to God and respects each individual's right to choose their own spiritual path. As you may have noticed, people come and go here as they continue on their spiritual way. Our philosophy is live and let live. And let me tell you, the Unity co-founders Charles and Myrtle Fillmore adamantly rejected adopting any dogmatic beliefs for Unity, to the frustration at times of their followers. What they wanted Unity to be was a common meeting ground where people of different opinions and different backgrounds would come together to discuss universal truths. Now, we do have the five principles, the five Unity principles that we talk about. Those principles did not come from the Fillmores. They actually came from their great-granddaughter, Connie Fillmore Bazzi, who became the president and CEO of Unity headquarters, and in the 1980s was so tired of all the pressure that was put on her to articulate just some basic things that Unity teaches, that she gave it her best shot and wrote down the five principles. And oh, by the way, it is up to each and every person whether you embrace any or all of those. Second, a cult instills fear in its followers. Are you scared? I'm like, oh my gosh. Talking about cults. On the contrary, Unity replaces fear, judgment, hell, and sinfulness with unconditional love and acceptance. Our path and our work is about overcoming fear, not instilling it. Next, a cult exalts its leader. Oh, bring it on. Listen. The last thing Charles and Myrtle Fillmore would have ever wanted would have been for people to worship them. They were constantly asking people to think for themselves, just as we ask you to do here. And in fact, people would get in, students would get in classes with Charles Fillmore, and they would say, well, what's the answer? You know, tell us what we're supposed to know. And he would turn it around and say to them, what do you think? What do you think? That's the important thing. Next. A cult pressures its members to give financially, and its wealth does not always benefit its members. We do teach prosperity principles in Unity, but primarily for the benefit of the individual. People tithe and contribute as they are led. To be sure, we as a community raise the funds we need to grow and serve the world in ever-expanding ways, but there is not the same kind of pressure that they're talking about here on financial giving and you never knowing where your money went. Next, cults are unwilling to let its people grow up and make their own decisions. This is the exact opposite of what we do in Unity. In fact, I think a lot of people are not drawn to Unity, or they turn away from Unity because we do put so much responsibility on the individual. This, your spiritual growth is up to you. You know, we tell people, you're responsible for your own lives, your own choices, and your own spiritual growth. And you've heard it here before. We tell you, you are a powerful, creative, spiritual being. Make your life what you want it to be. It's up to you. So given all these very stark contrasts, why would anyone call Unity a cult? Because we are different from the mainstream. And different is often threatening. Unity, as you know, is not traditional Christianity. We focus on Jesus' life and his teachings rather than the circumstances and meaning of his death. We see human beings as inherently good, not sinful, and not in need of saving. And for more on that, be sure to tune in next Sunday to my dialogue with Tom Baker about sin and salvation. We see Jesus as our way shower and our master teacher, but at the same time, we have that expanded perspective so that we can honor and appreciate the teachings and the wisdom of other spiritual masters. Someone who is a traditional Christian hearing this might say, if that's what you teach, you're not really Christian. The implication is that there is only one right and true form of Christianity, that everyone knows this, and that this has always been the case. None of that is true. And that has never been the case. Never. In his book, Friends in High Places, Thomas Shepard writes, "From day one, when Jesus gathered his disciples, there has never been anything approaching universal agreement on what the Christian faith teaches. Sects, schisms, and new thought movements have grudgingly coexisted from the very beginnings of the faith." And we also know, as we've talked about here, discoveries of ancient manuscripts show us that early Christianity offered an astounding array of paths to follow in the name of Jesus, including the Ebionites, the Gnostics, the Marcionites, the Docetists, the Arians, Adoptionists, Apollinarians, and many, many more. Some of the groups, this is ironic, some of the groups that gathered to figure out what Jesus said and meant and how to live by it were actually called Christ cults. Undoubtedly, each group thought their version right and the others heretical, unorthodox, or spurious. Over time, one group of Christians emerged as the majority, the proto-Orthodox group, and in Tom Shepard's words, quote, "In a grand sweep of revisionist history, the proto-Orthodox declared what they taught had always been the majority view of Christians everywhere. Their claim to perfect linear descent from Jesus and the apostles was like watching a squad of archers let loose a flight of arrows at a barn, picking one impacted shaft, then drawing a target around the arrowhead and declaring it a bullseye." Go, Tom. The fact is that Christianity has always been a cacophony of views and opinions. And unity is a bona fide and legitimate part of that. So, what do we do when people question our legitimacy? Well, first of all, we can take the high road rather than getting on our high horse. And that means pausing for a moment, sort of assessing the situation to gauge whether the interest is really sincere. And if the interest is sincere, then we can follow it, and we can follow up with gradually more information and background about unity. If someone asks me what unity is, I would typically say something like this. You hear it every Sunday. Unity is positive, practical, progressive Christianity. We seek to apply the teachings of Jesus in our own lives. And from that consciousness and spirit of love that we see in Jesus, that we learn from him, in unity, we welcome all people. Unity is inclusive, accepting, and non-dogmatic. And we leave it to the individual to follow their own spiritual path. Now, if I were asked by somebody, what is unity? But I could tell that the interest wasn't really sincere, probably would just say that first line, that unity is positive, practical, progressive Christianity, leave it at that, because there's really no sense engaging with someone who has already made up their mind, right? Ultimately, what is most important is not what we say at all, right? It's how we show up. It's how we live the truth that we know. Each and every one of us can demonstrate through our own example that this beautiful movement called unity and this amazing place, this amazing community of unity renaissance, changes lives. We can walk our talk becoming ever more compassionate and aware. And we can show through our lives, so the way we live our lives, the way we show up, the way we treat other people, we can show them that these uniting, empowering teachings of both Jesus and unity lead to a life of peace and harmony and joy, an abundant life. In the final analysis, people will remember us, notice and remember us most for who we are and how we are. What we want is for our lights to shine so brightly that when other people see it, they'll want to say to us, borrowing from that famous line from When Harry Met Sally, "I'll have what she's having," or "I'll have what he's having," or put another way, we want to live so fully and freely and joyfully and lovingly that other people notice and say to us, "Gosh, Unity did that for you? I think I'll give it a try." Let's turn now to our meditation. I invite you to get comfortable in your seat. Feel your feet on the good earth. Take a nice big deep breath in, filling your lungs with the air of life, filling your being with the presence of spirit. Breathing in as if breathing in through your heart, breathing out into love. I invite you to just set aside whatever random thoughts, busy thoughts you may be having. Just sink into that still place at the very center of your being. This place that is all peace, all knowing, all love, all grace. Breathe into the knowing that spirit in you has led you every step of your spiritual journey, every twist and turn, blossoming and shining ever more fully as you. Take a moment now to commune with the source of your true being and listen for what is next for you in the silence. Feel gratitude bubble up within us as we appreciate the beautiful masterpiece we are each creating in our own lives, the direction we've been given, the steps we've taken, the way forward, the bright promise of what's ahead. For these beautiful joys, for all the gifts of the Spirit, we say thank you, God. And so it is.